Hey guys.
Hey, this is Mind Pump.
You've been listening for like 3 years.
And we've only been on air for 2.
You should probably keep supporting us.
We need you to go to the website at mindpumpmedia.com.
But not just telling people. We need money.
Go to mindpumpmedia.com.
It's a financial thing.
Mindpumpmedia.com. Go there, enroll in the Math Super Bundle or the RGB Bundle, and you're going to get the No BS Six Pack Formula, the Fasting Guide, and the Nutrition Guide absolutely free. Keep hypnotizing, guys.
Help Justin and Sal.
I know you have a PayPal account.
They have kids. Help them.
Mindpumpmedia.com.
They need to eat.
If you want to pump your body and expand your mind, there's only one place to go. Mind Pump. Mind Pump. With your hosts, Sal DiStefano, Adam Schaefer, and Justin Andrews.
A while ago, there was a dude that worked out in one of the gyms that I managed. Big motherfucker.
Oh, like, okay. I see where you're going.
Yeah, I was young. I was like, let's see, I must have been 20. So it was like one of the first gyms that I managed.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I've always, look, I've got, I've got gay people in my family. We're a very loving family. I've always been very open-minded, not a big deal. But I did, without realizing, subscribe to the stereotype that, they're not as masculine, right?
Mm.
This big ass dude, and a big muscular motherfucker comes in to work out of my gym all the time. Dude's fucking jacked. Strong as shit, and he's a kickboxer. And so we would talk a lot afterwards, and he'd show me these moves or whatever. And one day I went to the gym where he trains, and the dude was hitting a heavy bag and was just fucking crushing it. And another dude walks in, another big dude, and they're like, "Hey, what's going on? What's up, bro?" And they kiss each other on the lips. And I'm like, "What?
Like, whoa."
And so afterwards I'm like, "Dude, you're
that didn't even make sense.
I'm like, "Is that your boyfriend?" And he's like, "Yeah, yeah." He's like, "You didn't know I was gay?" And I'm like, "Well, no, I don't know at all." And he goes, "Why?" Because I'm like a tough dude, and I'm like, and I felt stupid.
Such a stereotype.
But I felt so stupid because I'm like, well, I guess that's why I didn't think you were. And I was like, I remember realizing, like, geez, I totally fell into that stereotype, which is obviously not true.
Yeah,
because he could easily kick my ass. Mm. So anyway,
that happened to me once actually too.
You got your ass kicked?
one of the guys was like super masculine like that, and I was like, I was training him, and then I had no idea. And he did all kinds of sports and stuff. We like totally got off. Everything was great. And it was just like, I had no idea. He came in and his boyfriend came in, and they're, hanging out and grabbing ass and stuff. It was interesting.
I only feel awkward and weird when I assume that he's heterosexual and he's not. That's when I feel awkward. Like if you're you're talking to someone and to me, I don't see any of those, like you said, stereotypical signs that would tell me he's gay or not. And then I assume he has a girlfriend or a wife, and I ask about his girlfriend. Like, oh, so do your girlfriend go here all the time? And it's like,
well, what's funny is I feel more comfortable.
They give you subtle hints
like,
no, my partner and I actually do this. And then I do it again. And then by about the third time I go, what an asshole I am. Fuck. He was giving me little fucking freebies to let me know. Like he said, partner. And I'm just like, yeah, so she this? Is she that?
We just totally assume. I know. That's why I love it when like somebody's like super like out there and like extravagant. It's awesome. It's
like, thanks for the sign.
Yeah, it's like, thanks. I don't have to guess.
It's just one of those stereotype things. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah.
The only way that
we're
35
years old. We grew up in a different era right now. I mean, it's been a trend. I think you're 20 younger. It's a total. It's totally different.
Oh my
now.
God! 18 years ago, it was very different. The stereotypes were encouraged. I mean, not encouraged, but they were reinforced by conversation and stuff like that. Now, obviously, I know better, but it's pretty. It was pretty funny to see the dude walk in and kiss him, and I was like, "What just happened?"
See, I
don't know.
Your head just explodes.
I always find it fascinating as a society how we like when we were behind, like with our way of thinking, right? Very caveman with that mentality. But I also find it crazy how we always tend to go extreme, one or the other. Mm. It's like, and then like, and
I just put everybody in a box.
Yeah. I feel like, they go out of their way. And you know what this kind of reminds me of? So Sal last night sends me a text message.
Here we go.
He sends me.
Oh,
the,
wait, which one?
Sends me the, yeah, no, not, not that one.
Yeah. Let's
the one
that.
Before that, actually. Yeah. Before your mind turned me on so much.
Whoa.
He sends me a text message, and Katrina and I were literally just getting ready to Netflix and chill, but literally watch Netflix and documentaries.
Oh,
right?
It wasn't sex.
Yeah, it wasn't that. So we were.
That's code word.
We were in the documentary section. So right now, something that our New Year's resolution, I don't know if I shared this on air or not, but I'll share.
Watch more TV.
Yeah. So no, we have decided that our goal is to go at least 3 to 4 times out of the week. But we said, you know, never will we let 7 days go by where we don't make this time for ourselves. And that sounds weird because we sleep together every single night and we see each other all the time and communicate. But so much of what we communicate and do is related to business and related to other stuff and very surface. And sometimes we can just get tired and just crash and then realize that, hey, we're not always working on our relationship. And I think that's an important thing, especially when you're in one that you've been in for a long time. 6 years we've been together. And it's important to set create these habits. And so one of these habits that we're trying to create for ourselves is that we do something that is educational for ourselves. But we also understand it's late at night on a weekday or like that. So part of that, we're okay with it being entertainment. So sometimes we listen to an audiobook that we both want to listen to and learn about, or one of us will read and share. Sometimes it's just us sharing and talking about stuff. And then sometimes it's watching a documentary where we actually get something from it, right? That's good information. So we were literally doing that when you sent over that text message. So it was perfect.
And to watch was it called Minimalism?
Minimalism or the Minimalist.
Something like that. It's, you know, it's funny. So you're talking about so this is one of the things I love the most about Jessica. It's like something I absolutely love is when I hang out with people, sometimes I have a pretty keen sense of how people receive me. And sometimes I can tell that I'm being annoying or boring.
I receive you.
Exactly. Yeah. All of it. Yeah. Sometimes I can tell that, like, if I'm hanging around with people and like, hey, let's watch TV, and I'll be like, cool, I can find something good. And it's like, I'm going to watch a documentary, and everyone's like, oh, here we go, Sal. But anyway, I'm hanging out with my girl, and I'm like, hey, do you want to watch Westworld? Which, by the way, we've been kind of watching a little bit.
I knew you'd love it.
And she's like, she's like, I'm not really in the mood. And she goes, hey, you want to learn something? And I'm just like, oh, God damn it. I got the right girl.
She's made for you.
So that's why we went and looked at the documentaries, and we put on, God, we got to find the right name of it, because I want to make
sure. Oh, you text the right one, because we searched it right away. When she searched it, it popped right up. I think either one of those will pop up. But what I can't even remember what sent me down this road to why I wanted to share with it. But I thought it was it had a great message. There was a great message behind the documentary. And so a quick synopsis, I don't want to be spoil it or anything. I think everybody should watch it. I think there is something to take away from it, is the idea of living with just the bare minimums, what you need, versus this excessive amount of stuff that we have. And they had some great studies in there. They showed like just the increase in sales over the last, like, you know, 20 years, like 1970 and before. Like, there's this pretty natural growth of, you know, consumers buying things. Now, of course, there's things like, you know, what's the company that sends everything over that's changing the game? I don't know.
Amazon?
Amazon, yeah. Okay. Amazon is, like, obviously been a game changer for the ability for us to buy things and have it the next day. And so there's definitely factors. But, I mean, it's, like, astronomically different.
What they were showing, because they're showing this growth curve of the amount of stuff that we buy, and then it kind of exploded after the 70s. And now we live in way more space. Houses are much bigger. But they were pointing interesting things out. Like, they did this heat map of where families spend time in their house. And most people spend about 99% of their time in about 40% of the house. Like, people have a living room and nobody goes in the living room. They have a dining room, nobody eats at that new day. You know, they have like several areas to sit down and eat, but they only eat at the kitchen table. There's a patio that nobody spends time in. There's, you know, areas of the house that we don't spend time in. And we've got this big space, but yet we're not utilizing it. We just have more space, or we just have more stuff. Like, when I was watching, I was thinking about my kids, right? I mean, Justin, I know you can relate to this. Like, Christmas time, literally, I'll drive my kids home from Christmas with so much shit in the back of my car.
Yeah.
There's no fucking way they'll get through it all.
You're already strategizing it. Where can I hide this and then eliminate it?
Exactly. Like, they're not even going to play with it all.
No.
And then I look at myself and I look at my wardrobe and I open my closet and I'm like, I wear the same 10 pieces of clothing all the time, and very, very rarely or never.
I would argue like 5.
Do I wear this other shit? But that's my point. That was kind of the point of this. And what was interesting about it, because they definitely had speakers on there that I think got the message wrong.
Oh, definitely.
And it comes off as a religion.
Very interested to see where it was going to go and why you sent me in this direction, because I was like, get the fuck out of here. I'm going to light this thing up at the end of this, because I was like, I liked the message, but the problem I have with it is this. Here, let me back up a little bit. So what they did really good, and is what we're talking about, is that I think a lot of us in general, now this is an overgeneralization, but for the most part, a lot of us live in excess. We don't need a lot of the things. I'll be the first one to, I mean, I'm the guy with fucking like 400 pairs of shoes, of course, right? Mm-hmm. I have a shoe for every day. So, you know, is that excessive? Sure. But there is a point that they talked about too, where there's balance to that, right? Like certain things have meaning to you and have that are important to you and they make you feel good.
Well, that was the message. The message that I got from it, because there were people that were speaking on there, again, where I'm like, okay, they totally don't get it. Like these people are, some of these people use it as religion and I don't need, I only got what I need type of deal. But the reality is that do the things that you own serve you? So, for example, Adam, with your shoe collection, you fucking love your shoe collection. You have so much fun with it. It's something you enjoy doing. That's okay. But think of all the things that we own, all the shit that we own that doesn't serve us, that we could give two fucks about, right? That's the difference, and that's, I think, the message.
I'm big on purging. Like, yeah. I love, that's like one of the biggest weight loss therapy things for me. Yeah, nothing to do with that. But like, as far as like clutter and shit in my house, like, oh my God, it's such therapy for me to go through and take shit to the dump and just be like, I'll see you later and never again. And then, you know, that's you just kind of see this accumulation of stuff that just like sits there, and it annoys me because it's, you know, that nobody's using this stuff. Why do I even have this here? And I was thinking of, as you guys were talking about this, I haven't seen this documentary yet, by the way, but it reminds me of the last thing that we watched on TED Talks with the guy talking about addiction and how he actually was describing how people have like, you know, all this space in their house and they've, you know, we've built all these walls and like we're connecting with stuff more than we're connecting with people. And so this is like one thing, one of the problems that, you know, even with drugs, it's like a connection that I'm making with this that I'm not getting from a physical.
They got into this right
they
here.
They did.
And this part was interesting to me.
The meditative and all that stuff.
Yeah. And just the way and what, how much, and because I feel like it's kind of similar to the message that we give with being the counter to the industry, right? The fitness industry is promoting one message. We really are trying to represent the pushback on that in a sense, right? I feel like the same thing goes with kind of their message with the minimalism is, man, right now, like advertising and companies are pushing this image when in reality, it's really not like that. And it's unfortunate because where they showed these markers of like the increase of purchases and people buying more and more things, it's like it's going up the amount of stuff that you don't need when the amount of money that people, the average income and stuff like that is not increasing at that rate. So we're just, and they're showing like, you know, especially with like, they talked about people that are depressed and sad, like more sales. And you're trying to fulfill this part of your life. And I remember this happened for me. So I totally connected with these two guys. Both guys had a very similar childhood as mine. So they have these horrific stories, right, of their parents and stuff. And, you know, whatever, we could talk all day whose was worse or whatever, but we all had a rough childhood.
That's funny. I thought the exact same thing when I watched it.
Oh, right away.
Because I saw it right away and I was like, ooh, Adam's going to connect with that.
Oh, totally. Right. So I totally get what was their drivers. And I also get, I had that moment in my life, and I've kind of briefly shared this on the podcast before, where I pushed really hard at a young age to be successful. And I used to tell people, I really believed in my head I was gonna be retired by 30. Really, truly believe that. And I was on a mission to do that. And really what that was because I didn't have much growing up. And so it motivated me to push at this level. So I connected with those guys and I got that. And then I remember a point in my life and where I had a lot financially and with tangible things and monetary right stuff. Like, so once I got that and I realized that my life at that time was no better as far as my happiness and how I felt about my relationships and everything else going on besides my financial success, I actually really, it took a lot for me to step out and go like, wow, I'm nowhere near the happiest I've ever been in my life, yet I have the most stuff I've ever had in my life. And at that moment, my whole thinking of how I bought things and the stuff that I would go after completely changed. And, you know, someone that's an outsider looking in, like, oh, how can you say that? Because you have all these shoes and you're into watches. Well, yeah, there are certain things that I have invested in that I bought, because just like Sal said, I've learned to connect what things do make me happy, I do enjoy having, versus the things that were like that were poorly motivated. For example, I was notorious all through my 20s. I was that guy who, when I'd bring all my friends there'd be 10 of us all out, and I picked up every bar tab, mm-hmm. you know, because I could. You know, because I could do things like that. Or I was doing things in excess as far as like spending money on things that were just ridiculous, that would never not only hold value, but would also be burnt and gone, and Vegas trips and crazy stuff like that. Once I realized that these were not fulfilling my life, it changed my whole philosophy. It changed my drive, the way I looked at money, things like that. So I connected with all of that. What I didn't like about it was the extreme side of it, where it became almost religious. And then, and I don't like, cause the first thing I had to ask myself was, okay, look at these guys, right? Mm. And they referenced, like, they moved up in the corporate ladder. So I'm guesstimating that they were making 100 to 150 grand a year, which to me, I've always used to tell Katrina that the difference between 70 and 150K to me is very, very little.
Yeah.
It's not life changing. Making no money and making 70K.
Especially, yeah, where we live.
Yeah, it's all relative. It's all relative.
Scientists have actually established that. Yeah. They've shown that money does buy happiness up to a certain point. Yes. Once you have shelter, once you have clothing, once you have food, you have access to certain things, anything over that, you don't get any happier. This is why lottery winners are depressed. There's studies done on this on people who win the lottery, and it shows their happiness level spikes for about a year, and then it goes right back down to where it was before, and they're no happier than they were before.
Because they lost their purpose, you know. Like I don't know. I tend to think that like those types of people that get fortunate enough to get that kind of an influx of cash, like if you can't figure out how to you know, put that to use and to work and to help people or to do something with it, then that's the problem. Mm. You know, if you're looking at it as like, I just absorbed all of this and this is all about me, you know, like I could see that being depressing.
Well, see, something I kept, I wrote down and kept just referencing several times as I was watching the documentary, because one thing that I didn't like is how they demonized producers. They demonized industries, you know, mm-hmm. like in one scenario, they were talking about how the fashion industry, you know, in the 50s and 60s had like three seasons. And now I think there's 56 seasons, because their goal is to keep making new clothes and make styles go out faster and new styles come in faster. So people have to keep buying more and more clothes.
Yeah.
And it's true. People own ridiculous amounts of clothes, especially compared to people 50 years ago. And they're blaming the producers of that. But really, it's
that's our own fault.
Yeah, that's consumer driven. Yeah. But here's the thing. Like, I kept writing this down, that mankind's greatest strength, it can also be its greatest weakness.
No, that's
like,
one of my I've always said.
One of our greatest strengths is our desire to want to, you know, create more and do better and solve problems. Mm-hmm. But it also becomes one of our greatest weakness, because then we apply it in areas that don't necessarily serve us. Yeah. For example,
like, we could back off that throttle for sure.
Yeah. For example, like, we apply so much of our productive ability to clothes. And there's some good side effects of that. Look, lots of people make a good living doing it. It's definitely made clothes so inexpensive that now we don't necessarily see people going without clothes anymore. We have so many clothes that we throw them away now, right? Mm-hmm. So there are some good side effects, but there's also the bad side effect of, imagine if we took all that productive capability and applied it towards other things. Imagine if we solved the problem with clothes, but then moved away from that and said, okay, now let's solve this other problem. Let's all use our collective
The
ability.
The problem is, we'll never move away from it.
That's the thing. Yeah.
In any aspect. I mean, you put any of those things up on the board and you say, like, homes, we've figured out how to build an efficient home, like super, you know, efficient with energy and, you know, everything like maxes at its max capacity. Like, you know, everything is so efficient. But even then, there's going to be another way that we can improve on that. That's just how we think. We just look at one area and one topic, and it will never end. It's insatiable.
I didn't like, too, like Sal was saying, the demonizing part, too, is like, you know, I watch it, and then it makes me feel bad, because, you know, we're getting ready to house shop right now, and we're looking for a house with more square footage, right? and I already have like 2,600 square feet and I want like 3,500 square feet. So I'm watching this and I'm like, I'm not going to feel guilty for wanting more space just because I necessarily don't need only that. Like I'm looking at, if even if you did my heat, I want that. I want to be able to have a room where maybe I can just go. It never gets hardly any traffic and I want to go in there and I want to meditate.
Well, see, that's what it did for me. What it did for me was in my new place, I have a kitchen and I have a dining room like a lot of houses do, right? But when we were setting it up, you know, Jessica, she's like, she goes, what do we need a kitchen and a dining room for? We're just going to eat at one table. I'm like, well, every house has. And she made me realize how fucking ridiculous it was. And she said, look, this is our place. We live here.
Make it how you want, right?
And yeah, and watching that made me realize like, yeah, if you have a big house, it's great if you use the space for what you want. It's your place. Like, yeah. I love steam room, right? I could build it. I'm not going to feel guilty for having steam room because I'm going to use that shit
right?
to its fullest capacity. Yeah. Now, I will feel guilty if I have this extravagant, you know, room with fancy couches and shit that nobody ever goes in or uses.
The plastic that never comes off.
Yeah, then I'm kind of like, okay, well, that was a waste. That's not serving me. I don't have any value.
I see. I like that. I think that's a great way to take that because that's exactly how I felt too. Was just like, no, I'm not gonna get to that point. I'm watching this guy living in this house. I think the house was like 400 square feet or whatever, and it had sliding walls. So they had thought of everything. Like if you had company over, the wall actually slid, and then a curtain went across, and then there was a bed that folded down from the wall on that side.
Oh, they had like a little tiny, it was like a
Murphy bed.
Totally. Yeah. Awesome. I mean, they've made these houses. So what I always see, I can't help, my mind works backwards as far as like, okay, I right away see the motive for the business and the marketing and all that side. So when I heard the message right away, I'm like, okay, what are we selling? Where are we trying to? Because what are we trying to do? And sure shit, here come out all these houses. And I remember when I saw these last year,
like molecule homes.
Yes, I don't know what they call them. Like they might call them that, and
they build them out of like a trailer or something small, right?
Yeah, and then they put all these like testimonials of these people. And of course, there's always. I mean, if you do something crazy like this, or you create a cult of people that want to go to this extreme, you're going to find a couple of these with great stories, which they did. They found a guy that was on Wall Street making ridiculous six-figure money and decided that he was just going to get rid of everything and live this minimalist life where he lived his life out of a bag now, which to me, that's just, it's ridiculous.
You're like, cool.
Yeah, I'm all for it if it was for you and you needed that because he woke up one day and
he probably went to that extreme of the spectrum and then was just like, oh my God, this is way too much. And then like swung all the way the other way.
Which is fine if that's what you, here's the interesting thing. Here's the thing.
I challenge that though, if you think that's truly healthy though.
Yeah, what I was going to go with that is, here's the thing. Number one, minimalist lifestyle exists because we live in a society where we have already created.
Yeah, we got the luxury to do that.
Thank you. Yeah. Like you don't see people in third world countries going, I'm going to live a minimal. Like they're not concerned with that.
What an excellent point.
Yeah, sleeping all together in one bed.
Yeah. In fact,
It's almost pompous of us a little bit.
Let me tell you something. In fact,
it's ridiculous.
That documentary, which is kind of anti stuff, right? Could you get that vibe a little bit? Although the hosts of it do a good job of saying, look, it's not about consumption. Consumption's not a problem. It's about compulsory consumption. It's having a problem where you're consuming things that you don't really want. You buy things you don't need and you don't want that don't bring you value. That I understood. But as you're watching it, you get this kind of vibe of anti-wealth, anti-buying things, anti-having stuff. And I was watching that and I'm thinking to myself, holy shit, this is the best commercial ever for capitalism, because if you're in a country that's poor and you're watching that, you know what you're saying to yourself? Look at these motherfuckers. They're so rich.
They're downgrading.
They're so rich that they're complaining they have so much stuff that they want to just go backward. Like,
let's get rid of it.
Yeah, they have so much stuff that it's making them sad. Yeah. Like that's what I see from it.
Right.
But really, here's the thing. Here's the wonderful thing about progressing with mankind, especially when it comes to. Because look, markets are not perfect because humans are not perfect. But what markets do very well is they take a bunch of people who are just interested in serving themselves, which is human nature, okay, because that's how humans are, and it gets us to work together without actually consciously trying to work together. Like if I'm buying something from you, we're making a conscious effort to work together. And all the people that work to make your product didn't consciously work together, but they did. They organized each other to work together. If you're making a tennis shoe where there's several steps that go into making the rubber of the shoe. There's several steps that go into making the laces and putting these things in. All these people worked together to do that, but they did it on accident because they were all serving their own self-interest. And that's kind of the beauty of how markets work. But here's what's interesting. Here's the best part about the minimalist message in regards to that is if people truly, truly just went out and just did what they thought brought them value, true value, versus the whole, I'm going to get this because I'm supposed to, or I'm going to buy this because I think I need to, or because it's going to fill this empty hole in me. If you really went out and did and bought and consumed the things that you really understood and really thought and felt that really served you, we would make markets so much fucking better. The world would be better as a result, and a lot of the negatives that we see from markets, like this ridiculous production and consumption of things that sometimes you look at and you go, well, that's fucking stupid. Why are we spending so much time, you know, making these things and doing these things? It would refine itself into something so much better if people truly went out and really knew and really said to themselves, is this bringing me value? Do I really need these things here that I'm not going to actually use when I could take that?
Yeah, you're going to have to deprogram every single person in America that have been programmed since they're a little kid to, you know, to buy whatever this or that that they're marketing so hard at you. Is this going to bring me benefit?
Think about all the shit that we consume because and buy and use because of the artificial sense of status. Like I need to have the status. Like, I'm going to buy all this bullshit to put on my clothes or whatever so that other people, you know, think I'm better or whatever. And it's not serving me. You know what I'm saying? I don't really want it. It's just because I think it's giving, you know, that's just an example of what I'm talking about. Like, if we went out and actually bought the things that we thought really served us and did the things that really truly served us, then the market would produce more of those things and it would be truly reflective of what we really want, what really does us, you know, what does us good. And you can't help but apply this to our industry, to the fitness industry. Imagine if people went out with fitness and said, okay, what's truly serving me? What am I truly gaining value?
Well, that's the magic behind MAPS, bro. Yeah. That's the magic behind MAPS, is the simplicity of it, is doing the least amount that you need to do to get the most amount of, and it's like the same process of is getting rid of the shit that is not providing you much in your life and focusing on the thing that does provide you a lot. I love the YouTube project that went viral from this mindset, which was the Project 333, right? Project 333, which is the idea of 3 months of living off of 33 items. And that includes all your accessories, hats, underwear, socks, shoes, all stuff like that. And showing people that could you do this for 3 months? And I really like that. I like that as an exercise, right? Mm-hmm. Like, so when I see something like this right away, of course, my mind goes, okay, here's the business pitch out of this. These guys are going to make millions of dollars, which to me, I go like, let's find out. Okay, here's one I bet you didn't do, which I did because I was going this way. So right away, I evaluate, okay, these guys probably made 100-something grand, whatever, realize they chased this and that's not where true happiness is.
Now they're making millions off their documentary.
So now they're going to make millions off this documentary stuff. So I decided to start Google searching these guys and look deeper into their personal lives and where they're at currently, because this documentary was done about a year ago. I can't find anything because these kids are they're very smart the way they did they even created their own Wikipedia, which they're the only ones that have created. So if you go to their Wikipedia, you can see it's all linking back to their website. They own like all the pages of anything related to their name, minimalism.
So they bought some firm, an online firm, to go ahead and sort of wipe and clean slate all of their data and their information on the internet.
So that, and why I was digging into that, because I was really...
You want to see if they're hypocrites.
Yes, I want to see if these guys now have got millions of dollars and they're living in their 400 square foot house or they're, you know, and I doubt, I mean, you would be a real idiot to go out and spend money on something that ridiculous right away after making your first million. But, you know, even to see how they're living their lifestyle now.
But see, their whole argument, it would be hard to prove that, because then they could say, what this brings me value. See, their message that they themselves were pointing out wasn't necessarily that you live a only necessary life where all I have is, you know, one toothbrush, one cup, one. It's just, I'm only going to consume the things that truly serve me. And think about that. When you go buy something, when you go do something, ask yourself that. Like, is this really serving me? For example, I'll give you a great example. Scientists have established now in several studies that when people spend money on things, they get way less in terms of happiness and self-fulfillment than if they spend money on experiences.
Oh, yeah.
Experiences give people way more. So if I took, $2,000 and bought, the coolest electronics, speaker system or whatever in my house versus taking $2,000 and going on an awesome hiking trip out in the mountains with a guide and, learn how to meditate or whatever, I'm going to get much more value out of that experience than it will out of the $2,000 on stuff. And the reason, and the easy way to figure that out for yourself is to do that process before you go buy something.
Yeah.
Is this really serving me? And here's another example. We talked about this the other day in an episode. I don't even think it has aired yet, but we talked about gyms and the cost of a gym membership. Like people freak out. If a gym membership is over like $30, people are like, oh my God, it's so much money. Like if you use it and it's really serving you and you're getting fit and healthy, God, that's worth way more than $30. Think about how much money you waste on bullshit.
Yeah.
Every single week, right? But of course, it's your own. It's your own value.
That's an excellent point. I think that's an excellent point.
Yeah. And I wanted to get back to as far as maps is concerned, and just cutting through a lot of the fluff. So, when you're looking at programs, what's hyped the most? It's look at this person, look how sexy they are, look at everything is about some person that's promoting this thing. Mm-hmm. And who gives a fuck about that person? What is right. it gonna do for me?
Right.
And so that's a struggle that we've mentioned a long time ago when we were first kind of starting out with the podcast, is that's an uphill battle for us, because do we do all these hero shots? Do we, make this all about what we look like and what we're doing awesome shit that, other people are getting quote unquote inspired by? Or do we just give them what works and what, what the meat and potatoes is for them to see immediate progress and result? And this is how I feel with when I buy books and people ask me if I read, and yes, I do read. I definitely prefer the books that cut out all the bullshit and all this stuff about mm-hmm. here's my bio and here's what I've accomplished so far, and I don't give a shit. What are you trying to tell me?
Yeah. And this is it can be applied to we talk about supplements all the time, right? The average fitness consumer of supplements got to spend over $100 a month on stuff that is giving them what? What are they getting from that? Think about that for a second. Now, let's say I spend $100 a month on supplements, and we know the vast majority of supplements do shit. They do jack shit for you. So, but let's just pretend that they give me, 2 extra pounds of muscle a year from spending $1,200 a year or investing I've invested $1,200 a year to gain those 2 pounds of muscle. Or I could take $1,200 and what else could I put that in that may serve me better, may serve me more, rather than falling for that whole compulsory consumption model of buy more supplement, buy this new drink.
You could go to someone's seminar.
Yes.
I mean, are you kidding me? For $1,200, you can go listen.
You could hire a good fucking a really good trainer for 10 workouts.
Yeah.
Do those over the course of 10 weeks, and you'll get way more benefit. Mm-hmm. It'll serve you way more. You'll do more than build 2 pounds of muscle, and you'll have an incredible experience. Versus I get this, fruity, chemical laden drink, sent to me, mm-hmm. Every single month. You know what I'm saying?
Isn't that crazy too? That's why supplements fall in this sweet spot of pricing too, right? It's gotta be just low enough that people go it's worth the try.
It's kind of buying groceries.
Yeah, right? It's $20 to $50 a shot each time I do one of these bottles, and it's it's worth the try. And of course they tie it to some guy, like you said, that looks amazing and he's badass and, says he takes this stuff every single day and that's how he got there, when there's 100 other things, disciplines that he's taught himself to get his physique to look like mm-hmm. that has nothing to do with that supplement, So
here's an interesting study I'd like to do. I would like to take a group of people and divide it in half of beginner to intermediate people. So just regular Joes, right? And half of them I'd like to invest $500 a month in the most cutting edge supplements that we just give them. And then they go do their own workout, whatever. Mm-hmm. The other half, I'd like to take $500 a month and invest it in professional coaching from the best coaches and personal trainers who can work with them online or virtually, just kind of show them what to do.
Education
seminars, yeah. Or great exercise programming. Split them up, take the same investment, give them 6 months, and then see the difference in results.
Oh, yeah.
There's no doubt. Actually, there's no doubt in anybody's mind. Ladies and gentlemen, if you your favorite fitness celebrity that's selling you all this bullshit supplements, you pose this question to them, you will paint them in a corner. They will not be able to answer because they know the answer. They know what the answer is. And the answer is that the $500 a month investment in professional coaching or good exercise programming or education will kick, won't just, it won't even be close. It will kick the shit out of the...
Plus it's long lasting.
That's what I'm saying. It'll blow it the fuck away. And so when it comes to, I know we're a fitness podcast now, so I keep trying to bring it back there to apply it there, but... If you ask yourself that question, is this serving me? How is this serving me? Is this something that I truly value? You will take whatever money you have to invest in your fitness, wellness, health, and longevity, and it will be spent much, much more wisely.
Well, and I think there's a lot to learn with this mentality, and that's why I probably struck a chord, is because, like, same thing with exercises. Like, there's a specific number of exercises we know creates the most benefit, right? And to be a minimalist, I would focus just on mastering, like, these five lifts.
Wow, you know what? What a great point. Like, are we not minimalist when it comes to exercise?
That's what I meant about this is what MAPS represents. It represents, like, if you were going to do a bare minimum amount of stuff, these are the moves. We're not saying that people can't build off of this or you can't modify. We encourage that with people's programs.
In fact, we include modifications.
Yes, but the idea and the point that we're trying to get across is, listen, if you do these basic movements three times a week, watch what the fuck happens. Absolutely.
Most of it is psychologically, like, it's tough. It's tough to kind of keep going through the process of, like, well, I have these things and it's so simple. It's just, I feel like there just needs to be more. And I need to, like, clutter my program with all this other, like, fancy moves. And I see this Instagram person doing this and that. And it's a lot like having a shit ton of clothes, you know, that you never wear. It's just like, what's the point? You know, you want to just keep putting all these clothes on top of each other? Yeah. Or are you going to stick with what, you know, you look awesome
in? What serves you? You know what I'm saying? What serves you best?
There shouldn't be a single exercise movement or whatever in your workout that does not somehow serve your fitness or wellness or whatever your goal or target is. Now, if your goal or target is simply to, I just want to work out, I don't give a shit if it does anything for me, I just like to exercise, well, you don't need a program. Just go into a gym and just start doing random shit.
Yeah.
But if that's not you, and I know that's most of you are not that person, there shouldn't be a single thing in your program that doesn't serve you. If you were to list your priorities of things or the things that you know are going to serve you most in terms of fitness and health, it would be two categories of things. Actually, it would be a few categories, but the top two would be how you work out and how you eat. And if you broke down how you ate, it would be whole natural foods. It would be foods that nourished your body. It wouldn't be, you know, this bar or this powder or this, you know, whatever, chemical whatever, or I need to have this sweet tasting something, so I'm doing this artificially flavored, you know, whatever. I mean, again, if it truly serves you, that's fine. But I think if you ask yourself that question, most of you will say, it doesn't. It doesn't really do me any good. And if you approach your fitness and health with this minimalist, and I hate to label it minimalist attitude, but if you approach it with this attitude of, is this going to serve me, you'll find that the decisions you make and the things that you do for your health and wellness will be the things that will make the biggest changes in how you feel, both mentally, physically, even spiritually. Everything from sleep, meditation, the kind of food that affects your gut microbiome, like all these things that are very, very important that serve you, you'll find that that's where your money, time, and energy are going to go, and you're going to stop spending time and money and energy in things that simply don't serve you. So with that, if you like Mind Pump, leave us a 5-star rating review on iTunes. If we like your review and we pick it, you're going to get a free Mind Pump t-shirt. Also, check us out on Instagram at Mind Pump Radio. You can find me at Mind Pump Sal, Adam's at Mind Pump Adam, Justin's at Mind Pump Justin, and Mr. Doug Eggy is at Mind Pump Doug.
Thank you for listening to Mind Pump. If your goal is to build and shape your body, dramatically improve your health and energy, and maximize your overall performance, check out our discounted RGB Super Bundle at mindpumpmedia.com. The RGB Super Bundle includes MAPS Anabolic, MAPS Performance, and MAPS Aesthetic, 9 months of phased expert exercise programming designed by Sal, Adam, and Justin to systematically transform the way your body looks, feels, and performs. With detailed workout blueprints and over 200 videos, the RGB Super Bundle is like having Sal, Adam, and Justin as your own personal trainers, but at a fraction of the price. The RGB Super Bundle has a full 30-day money-back guarantee, and you can get it now plus other valuable free resources at mindpumpmedia.com. If you enjoy this show, please share the love by leaving us a 5-star rating and review on iTunes and by introducing Mind Pump to your friends and family. We thank you for your support, and until next time, this is Mind Pump.